You may approach. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Sterling Huff for the appellant, Your Honors. I do appreciate the Court of Appeals coming out west. It's certainly more convenient for many of us out here and gives, quite frankly, our clients better access to justice. So we do appreciate that. This is obviously a very contentious divorce case involving two children that were in a contested custody situation. There was actually a third child that was raised by these folks, but she was not an issue or a party to these particular proceedings, as she had not been adopted by the appellee mother of the case, and she was obviously part of a separate custody action that predated this one. In looking at this situation, Your Honors, and after the briefs were submitted, my reply brief, I think, was in early August of 2019. On August 30th of 2019, the case of State of Nebraska on behalf of Caden S. and Jeffrey T. Was released. And I think that case certainly has some applicable bearing on the situation at hand here. As this court is aware, in the Rhinemouth case, the case initially started out in front of Judge Derek Weimer when one of our judges in the 12th Judicial District had retired. So Mr. Judge Weimer was handling the case initially, and then Judge Miller was appointed, and she took the file over in about November. Applicable case of the Caden case that I just spoke about earlier essentially got rid of what I would loosely refer to as the hard and fast rule, where district courts were not supposed to be looking so much at joint physical and joint legal custody, but were supposed to be looking at custody with one parent, parenting time with the other parent. And Caden uses the same statutory factors that this court has been familiar with for many, many years. I'll just briefly go through those. The relationship of the minor child to the parent prior to the commencement of the action, the desires and wishes of the minor child, if based on sound reasoning, general health, welfare, and social benefit of the child, and then any kind of credible evidence of abuse, which was the common factors that the court looked at prior to the Caden case coming out.
Mr. Huff,
yes,
normally
ma'am.
Parties are pretty satisfied when they can share custody of their children. So how did the court abuse its discretion by doing that in this case?
Largely the issue with this case, Your Honor, was a lack of ability to communicate by my client with the mother of the children. And I'm going to get back into the Caden case, and I'm going to answer your question at the same time, if that's all right, Judge. They had, as you can tell, a significant amount of trouble communicating on even basic issues.
That's not uncommon when divorce actions are pending.
It is certainly not. The issue with this particular case is that led to a lot of struggles, particularly with the older minor child. She's engaged in a lot of activity, which I loosely refer to was not her best interest. She was dating men significantly older than her. She was 12 and 13 at the time this case started. She was engaging in sexual relationships with older men. Ended up in a very unfortunate situation where an older man was taking sexually explicit photographs of her. She had engaged in threatened some self-harming behavior, ended up spent about a week in the behavioral health unit. And then she had actually snuck out of both parents' respective houses. There was some significant trouble, though, related with my client, related to the mother. The child had left her mother's house when she was supposed to be there, and had taken some pictures of her smoking marijuana out of a bong, and at that point in time, I think she was about 13 years old. The issue that led to with my client and the mother and the minor child was related to their counseling and trying to basically form some structures and some framework in to kind of guide the child and protect her. And my client is a school teacher. He is very regimented in rules, and that's kind of how schools operate. They have rules for teachers, they have rules for kids, and that's how school teachers operate. The mother in the situation in this case, which led to a lot of these problems, that you can tell from Melissa Bauer Post's testimony, who was the counselor, there was a complete lack of framework. And Ms. Bauer Post referred to the relationship of the child with the mother more of a sibling relationship, like she treated her like a sister and didn't set boundaries for her. Ms. Bauer Post was pretty clear in that that the mother needed to set boundaries. She needed to take a harder stand, and those were the things that led to a bunch of difficulty with my client with the mother, which I would say were beyond the norm of an ordinary divorce case, because it was really negatively affecting this child. And there was a lot of testimony in the case about illegal drug use by the mother and drug possession and that stuff by the mother. There was some testimony from the upstairs neighbor about the yelling and screaming that was going on downstairs between the mother and her new boyfriend and the children, and the overwhelming smell of marijuana that was coming from the apartment. And it was those kinds of behaviors at home from the mother, starting with during the initial separation when the two teenage girls had found the marijuana in her vehicle and told their dad about it, and found the illicit affair that she was having and again told their dad about it, that really set the stage for going forward, where the mother wasn't setting appropriate boundaries that Ms. Bauer Post clearly wanted her to set. In looking at the Caden case, one of the issues that was addressed in that case there was a recommendation from the counselor in Caden that was for joint physical custody. Obviously, Ms. Bauer Post didn't support that. She had signed an affidavit during one of the temporary hearings that the mother's parenting time should be reduced, and that some more structure should be put in place between the mother and the child. And obviously, albeit she wasn't allowed to actually testify as to her opinions at the time of trial, which I think was an error by the trial court, but clearly based on the content of her testimony, was not supporting a joint physical custody situation of this magnitude.
Mr. Huff, if I could interrupt you for a moment, the trial court made some pretty detailed findings with regard to joint physical custody, didn't it?
She did.
Yeah. And noted some concerning behaviors by both parents.
She did.
And the need for this child to have the parents maybe communicate better and be less contentious.
She did.
So how do we, in reviewing the trial court's factual findings, how do we find an abuse of discretion here?
Well, I think some of the abuse of discretion, unfortunately, Your Honor, I think goes back to, I would have liked to have been able to hear Ms. Bauer Post's summation on why she felt that things needed to change in the fashion in which they were set. And I'm going to sum up my answer real quick for you, if I may, Judge Moore. The other issue in Caden, which I think is different than in this Rhyma situation, is in the Caden situation, the trial court gave the father sole legal custody of all the issues of legal custody, and I think that was an effort to reduce the friction and reduce the communication between the parties. What Judge Miller actually did in this situation was actually kind of the polar opposite of that. She gave the mother sole legal custody over medical decisions, which she largely had not been participating in at any time during the separation, and then gave my client sole legal custody over education, and clearly he was the educator. I think that was the appropriate thing to do, but the simple fact is the mother hadn't been participating in any appreciable degree in the counseling. I have 1 minute left. If you folks have any other questions, I'd be happy to take them. Otherwise, I will sit down for a moment.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Lindsay Snyder. I represent Ms. Rhinemuth, the appellee in this case, and like Mr. Huff, I'm also very appreciative that you are coming out west our way. It's much more convenient for us. I think the primary objective for Ms. Rhinemuth in this case is to have the trial court's order affirmed and to have the joint custodial situation ordered in the decree continue moving forward. Mr. Huff talked about the Caden S. case, and I think we've really seen a shift in how the judiciary is going to be looking at custody situations, and we're moving more towards a neutral stance that's more dictated by the best interests of the children in compliance with what the Parenting Act calls for, making best interests really the pole star for our decision making in these custody cases. In reading Caden S., I see reference to I think it's Leonard's case. And Caden S. was also similar, where you have these highly contentious relationships between the parents post-separation, poor communication, maybe withholding visits, frustrating visitation, things of those natures. And in both
and that happened in this case, didn't it?
Yes, it did happen in this case. And that I'm going to touch on that point because I think it was a really important factor in the trial court's decision to order joint custody in this situation. Despite those difficulties in communication, it seems that that's no longer going to be something that we can truly rely on in going into court and saying joint custody is not in these kids' best interest because the parents can't communicate. We've kind of removed that to a certain degree from the factors. So in what I found interesting in Caden S., the trial court's justification for the one-week on, one-week off parenting plan was it best ensures compliance with the order of custody so that the child can enjoy the full benefits of having both parents involved to his life the greatest degree of possible. Then we turn and look at our trial court's decree. And she says, joint custody is in the best interest of the children. The children are going to benefit from that regular, continuous block of contact with both parents. And those longer blocks of time ensure that both parents are going to remain actively involved in the children's lives. I think the trial court took its obligation to independently assess the situation and come to its own conclusion as to what's best for the children very seriously.
In looking out for the best interests of the children, though, isn't there an obligation to also ensure that, to the extent that trying to share, having joint custody is the preferred option, perhaps, mm-hmm. At least from the parents' perspective, if one household, if that environment is so much more loose, so to speak, if there aren't any curfews, if there aren't any rules about going out with boyfriends or whatever, which is what Mr. Huff is suggesting mm-hmm. and what the record suggests may have been the case in the mother's home. So given that and given the difficulty with this teenage daughter, is it appropriate to have that daughter equally in her mother's home as the father's home where there's more structure?
Well, I think that there were certainly suggestions from appellant and appellant's witnesses that Ms. Rhinemuth had no structure, had no rules, and was kind of loosey-goosey with her teenage daughter. But I think the record also shows that that's not entirely the case. This young girl, by Ms. Bauerpost's testimony, is a girl caught in the middle of a very contentious divorce. I think Ms. Bauerpost testified that she tells people what they want to hear. And I think what Ms. Bauerpost also talked about ultimately is she needs both of her parents. And so when you turn around and look at the evidence presented by Ms. Rhinemuth, she does have rules. She takes a different approach to parenting, and she recognized that there's a different approach to parenting, but there are advantages to both. She's the loving, nurturing, let's talk through this, let's understand this parent. Mr. Rhinemuth is more of the enforcer, and she openly admitted that.
What about, there's evidence that there was a lot of marijuana odor coming from her apartment fairly regularly. Was there evidence that that was occurring when the children were in the home?
No, and I take issue with that testimony, I think, from, it was Mr. Hernandez. What came out through his testimony is he was very well acquainted with Mr. Rhinemuth's family. And I think that, I would suggest, created some bias, and perhaps the trial court judged his credibility based upon watching him. I think the testimony was also, Ms. Rhinemuth was not using in Nebraska. She was traveling to Colorado and using where it was legal. She was not using around the children. There was no evidence that the children were exposed to this during the pendency of the case. She had quit some of her CBD stuff in favor of seeking some more traditional treatments for her medical issues. So there was...
Do you think a parent should not have joint physical custody because they smoke marijuana?
No. I think for a parent to not have joint physical custody, there needs to be a demonstration of parental unfitness. And that wasn't demonstrated here. There was nothing that showed that Ms. Rhinemuth was not standing willing, ready, and able to discharge her parenting duties, albeit her approach was perhaps different from that of Mr. Rhinemuth.
Do you think it may have an adverse impact on children if they have knowledge that their parent is violating the law of the state? Granted, not every state, but of this state. If teenage children are aware that their parent is willing to violate the law, is that problematic in terms of custody?
I don't know that it's problematic in terms of custody. It might be problematic in how you frame those issues for the child moving forward. I would think that those are separate issues.
Could you address the issues that were raised with respect to Mrs. Rhinemuth's involvement with the schooling of the children, mm-hmm. and the any suicidal statements that she may have made?
Yes. Ms. Rhinemuth tried to be involved in the schooling and the education of particularly the teenage daughter. The younger kiddo, I think, was only in daycare or preschool, so that wasn't really applicable. She testified about her attempts to go to the school, to get signed up on the Infinite Campus, to be informed of these things. Interestingly enough, Mr. Rhinemuth is a teacher in the school district in which the child attends, and I think the testimony at trial was that her efforts to be involved were frustrated, part and parcel by Mr. Rhinemuth's involvement in the school.
Can you address the argument of the appellant that your client was not involved in the health-related matters for the children?
That's a very interesting issue. She attended some sessions with Melissa Bauer-Post and I think was very frustrated with how that was going, and so she sought and obtained permission to get a separate family counselor. And her testimony was, except for the sessions that were canceled by Mr. Rhinemuth, she attended all those family therapy sessions. She participated in the teenage daughter's treatment at the behavioral health unit. She was on top of the younger child's lice it was frequently happening. His respiratory issues, I think in the text message you'll see she was regularly communicating about that, expressing concern about that. To say that she was not actively involved in her children's medical care or mental health care is absolutely false. She was very involved. I do want to touch base on your question about the suicidal comment. That happened in, I think, June or July of 2017, immediately following the filing or the first temporary order issued in the case. And I think Ms. Rhinemuth was very honest that she was trying to get attention. She was trying to make some headway in seeing her children. It was not appropriate. She shouldn't have said that. She was not suicidal. I do want to address your question that you brought up in the beginning about attempts to frustrate parenting time. There were at least four occasions where Mr. Rhinemuth withheld parenting time, sometimes unilaterally, without court permission. He would not allow my client to have the youngest kiddo on Thursdays on her day off, threatened to call law enforcement if she didn't take him to daycare. Holidays, birthdays were difficult. Mr. Rhinemuth made it clear from the get-go he was out to limit her parenting time, and every temporary order he asked for sought more and more restrictions. Your Honors, it's my position that the trial court did not abuse its discretion, and I would ask you to affirm its order in its entirety. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to address a couple of things, Your Honor, in looking at this case globally, we had the issues with the mother threatening suicide. the mother out, seeing multiple men. And in fact, she made a statement during the course of the trial that she had tried to get the minor child's biological father and then another individual involved in her life.
Mr. Huff, I think we can all agree that there were bad facts for both these parents, really. I mean, your client frustrated parenting time. Your client made some medical decisions unilaterally without involving the mother with regard to the teenage daughter. And those were the facts that the trial court had to weigh. There were bad facts on both sides. So in trying to determine whether there's an abuse of discretion, what really tips the scale so significantly that the court abused its discretion in having these parents share their children equally?
Unfortunately, I think the bottom line of that, Your Honor, is this daughter was emulating what her mother was doing, and it wasn't in her best interest.
Was there testimony from an expert to that effect, that it was the mother's behavior that was causing the daughter to behave this way?
Unfortunately, in the ultimate questions with Ms. Flower Post, there was an objection made. She wasn't able to answer those questions, Your Honor, which I think was an abuse of discretion. I think Ms. Flower Post was the counselor that was clearly in the position to address that, clearly had the basis for it. As has been indicated earlier, there was a temporary hearing where another counselor, Tracy Campbell, got involved at the request of the mother, and then she wasn't brought to the trial to provide any testimony. So unfortunately, I think it was an abuse of discretion not to allow Ms. Bauer Post to state her opinions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your attendance here today. You are excused, and your case is submitted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next case this morning is State on behalf of Macy W. versus Mark B.